Well, that'll about do it, folks. Ted Barron signing off on WGXC Acra.
.7 FM, WGXC, Acra.
The Magic Strangers Radio Show is brought to you by WGXC
from 9:30 until midnight
on the first and second Thursdays of every month.
And if there happens to be a fifth Thursday in any given month,
the Magic Stranger may be there with his box of records to share with all of you WGXC listeners.
So, if you happen to be driving down the road or
twiddling your thumbs out in the woodshop,
give the Magic Stranger a listen.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Welcome to At Issue. Today is Wednesday, September 19th. I'm John Kane.
And this is Marikita Reese.
And we are joined today by New York State Senate candidate Aaron Glad, who's running in the 43rd for the seat being vacated by Kathy Marchione. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about yourself. A little introduction to the voters.
Yeah, so I'm a poor kid from upstate New York. I grew up in a small village called Saranac Lake. My mom was a high school dropout. I grew up in a pretty broken family structure. But despite that fact, I had things like a quality public education. I had a community that cared. And I had a chance to go to college. And I went to the University at Albany. And then I went to the Nelson Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy. After grad school, I did something a little different than most people who get involved in public service. You know, I first started working for a very liberal congressman in Washington, D.C., a guy named Mike McNulty. And then I went and I started working for a very conservative Republican in the New York State Senate, a guy named Tom Libous. And then I also worked for Governor Andrew Cuomo as his deputy policy director. And in between all of that, I took off 4 years to enlist in the United States Army. I became an officer. And I was a platoon leader in the 1st Cavalry Division, where I led 40 soldiers across the eastern mountains of Afghanistan in Wardak Province. So my life of service is probably different than most. It's unique, but I think it sets me up for success in this new role, which is running for the 43rd State Senate District.
What is it about public affairs that attracted you initially? I mean, a lot of people come into public service through law school,
yeah,
or after law school. You know, it seems like your trajectory was always this way.
Well, I think it's how I grew up, right? So I was a very poor kid in upstate New York. If it weren't for social programs like CHIP and food stamps and TAP, programs that aren't aimed at raising the ceiling, but really lifting the floor for poor kids like me to be able to have a chance to succeed. Without those kind of programs, without people ushering in those kind of programs, looking out for me, I wouldn't be here today. And I think that that service and that, you know, that desire to give back to kids, because, you know, frankly, as much as I've worked hard and as much as I've done the work to get where I am, you know, the reality is a lot of it had to do with luck. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it should have to do with luck when you're talking about children who want to be able to succeed, somebody achieving their potential. It had nothing to do with luck, you know, and that's why I'm in this race. That's what's been motivating me since, you know, I've grown up and through college, through the military, through working for both sides of the aisle.
Certainly there's been an imbalance in terms of equality of opportunity for kids across various race or income lines when they're growing up. You know, what are some things we can do to level the playing field?
Well, I think you have to start electing people who understand those issues in a different way than just reading them in a book, right? And I think what I bring to the table is not just an understanding of what it's like to grow up in poverty or what it's like to grow up in a situation that's difficult, but I also bring this very unique rural background to it, right? Because rural education and rural healthcare and rural transportation, those all require a different policy prescription than other urban issues. It's not to say that one's more difficult than the other, but it does say that we need to recognize both. And in this district particularly, we have a lot of rural kids who are being left behind.
So speaking of this district in particular and of the 43rd, I mean, we have some very, you know, Hudson does not look like Saratoga in terms of the demographic makeup of its voters.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is it that unifies them? And how do you say to someone who voted for Marchione, hey, it's time for you to switch sides and vote for a Democrat?
Yeah, here's what I'll say about this district that's interesting. Right, when they redistricted a few years ago, this became a different district. They added Columbia County. It went from a very strongly held Republican district to a district that President Obama won with overwhelming numbers. But President Trump still won, you know, 2 years ago. So this is one of those pivot districts that really looks at the person and makes a decision about that person and who they want in office. What unites us is much greater than what divides us, right? The typical playbook on the other side is going to be repeal this, repeal that, shut it down. But what people are really telling me when I'm out there knocking doors is, you know, we want to make sure that our kids have an opportunity. We want to make sure that healthcare is a priority and that we start being adults, sit down and figure out how to fix it. They want to make sure that we have clean water. They want to make sure that we're able to retire. They want to make sure that their officials in government aren't crooks. You know, and I think that's what people want. They care less about left and right in this district than other districts. And I think you've seen that this year, and you see it when you knock doors.
It's true. I mean, certainly, I think that our idea of political corruption, you know, when we talk about corrupt politicians, we have to be able to differentiate between, you know, one person may be very self-dealing. Someone else may realize that you have to grease wheels to get things done. I think that there is a lack of understanding among the general population. You know, certainly we all respond to news stories. It's easy to make a politician look corrupt, right? It's mm-hmm. It's a more complicated story within. You used to work for a Republican. What is it about the Republican Party that you find compelling?
Well, here's what I'll say is that when I worked for the Republican a decade ago, that was a very different Republican Party than the Republican Party of today.
Very correct.
And, you know, Republicans aren't bad people.
No.
There are extremists on the Republican Party, just like there are extremists in the Democratic Party. You know, but I think when you get down to it, the Republican that I worked for, right, he cared about kids with disabilities. He cared about making sure that children had an opportunity to succeed, and so he started early reading programs. You know, there are good Republicans in this state.
Absolutely.
You know, again, it goes back to getting past the titles that we give each other. We try to divide each other by saying you're this one thing. Here's a label. I think that my background has done a good job of dodging kind of those labels, right? I've worked for both sides. I served in the Army. It's unique, I think, and that's how you get beyond those typical politicians who come from either families of wealth, families with famous names, you know, more lawyers, you know, people who are picked by the person leaving because they're next in line. You know, getting beyond that and saying, let's elect some people who are good people and want to do the right thing for the right reason.
Right.
And want to protect people who can't protect themselves. Like, that's what government's for.
I mean, certainly I think that, you know, Republicans traditionally have had, you know, a message of self-reliance, but of an even floor so that everyone can compete and people who need to rise up can, or who are going to rise up can rise up. That's always been very compelling to me. Yep. There's a pick yourself up by your bootstraps that I find very compelling as part of a message. It's getting washed out where they are right now.
Yeah, they also talk about lower taxes, and that's a real thing. We can't continue to raise taxes on people and expect them to live in our communities. We can't continue to have a property tax crisis without addressing it. But I think you're right that the Republican Party has abandoned many of the people who are real Republicans, the Republicans that I worked for 10 years ago.
Right. I mean, certainly John Faso had recommended as part of a healthcare overhaul that the 26% of property taxes in this district that were going towards Medicare be shifted to the state in general, which would have put more burden downstate brought some relief to upstate homeowners.
Yeah, I think Stephanie Miner actually brought up something very similar where the Medicaid takeover by the state would alleviate a lot of our property taxes, and we need to look at that. That's a real serious issue that I think deserves merit that we can look at. You know, the state, I think, took over the growth, but if you're in upstate, again, you need to be considered in a different area than downstate.
Right.
And I'm not opposed to the state taking over, you know, that cost for upstate. We need to make sure that we're not being left behind.
I know that a lot of you know, a lot of our school taxes go towards legacy costs and pension plans for teachers, and you know, this is a high cost burden, and it also affects the funding of our schools. It affects the money that we have to teach students. Is that something that, you know, we might look at shifting costs around? Certainly we should obviously meet our pension obligations to teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at what cost to students? You know, we're in the Hudson City School District. So much of the money out of their budget is just fixed and goes right to pensions. There's not much left to go to the students who are in school now. That's a real problem. And it makes for an underperforming school.
Yeah, and I think the way that you solve that is you elect people who are willing to sit down and work on those problems. You know, one of the things that upsets me the most about the Senate is that in June they picked up all their stuff and they leave. And they say, there's no more work left to do. We're going home. There's a lot of work left to do. You know, these people are being paid for full-time jobs and they treat it like part-time jobs. You know, if they're serious about solving the problems that are affecting us, then they need to be working on these full-time. That's why, going back to corruption, you need a full-time legislature. We need to do that. We need to work full-time on these issues. This is not a part-time job when people are losing their homes or their savings, when children are being left behind, when communities are waking up and being told that they've been drinking poison water. You know, this is a full-time job.
Right. Certainly. So let's talk about some of the other races that came up in the primary last week. Starting with, obviously, the governor. Cynthia Nixon did not do well statewide, but here in Columbia County and in the surrounding areas upstate, she outperformed Governor Cuomo. I mean, obviously, that says we have a different brand of Democrat upstate than we do downstate. What's the difference?
Yeah, I'm not sure the difference, but I will 100% agree that that was a very strong signal to the Democratic Party and to the governor. On what the priorities of this next legislature need to be. I think that corruption and healthcare, those come right to the top. People are tired of us kicking the can down the road. They're tired of us putting blame on other people. And they're tired of us just saying things because it's politically expedient. Repeal this, repeal that. That doesn't actually work. That's not how you govern. And I think the strong message is, if we use our solemn vote to vote for you, and you go to Albany and you mess around, then we're going to take you out. And I think that's the message they sent, and that's what you saw with the IDC. Right?
Do you feel that Cuomo is going to adapt his campaign strategy going forward? Because it looks like every single county surrounding Albany within a 50-mile radius all went for Nixon heavily. Yeah. Do you think he's looking at that feedback and those numbers from Columbia, Green, Albany, Schoharie, all of these counties, and you do think maybe he'll...
I mean, he has the nomination now, well, right?
Right, but I mean, that's a large part of the state that is very unhappy with him. Do you think that he's going to...
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I don't know what those numbers, if they're saying we're voting against you because we want to send you a message, or we're voting against you and we're also going to vote for the Republican.
I mean, there were some genuine Cynthia Nixon supporters. I don't begrudge Ms. Nixon the opportunity to serve publicly. I wish that she had picked a smaller race. To start with.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, this is a wall you just can't climb. And if you don't have the management experience.
Exactly.
I would not want to start. I would not want to start my life in public service.
With a state of 20 million people.
And $167 billion GDP. You know, that's.
Yeah.
It's a lot. You know, having said that, you obviously have the right to run. And it did push him a little bit more to the left. So, you know, for that, I'm grateful.
Right. That's what I'm getting at, basically. I'm wondering if going forward, Cuomo is maybe going to adopt some of Nixon's proposals and, you know, policies that were trending really well upstate, and maybe try to win this district back over a little more before heading into November.
And we completely forget, you know, the attorney general race. I thought, you know, Teach Out would probably win for sure just because we're so familiar. We forget, you know, there is, I think, some city downstate, down the river somewhere.
I've heard of
people
it.
On it. Yeah.
You know, few million.
And they have their own priorities, and we're locked in with them.
Right.
So, you know, certainly we live in a much bigger world than we sometimes realize. I'm wondering if Teach Out is done running for public office now.
I don't know. I mean, how many losses is this now? Three?
Well, she ran for governor, mm-hmm. and then she ran for Congress, mm-hmm. And now attorney general.
So this is her third.
I got to hand it to her for staying out there, though.
Yeah, that's stamina.
certainly we wish her well. Well, Mr. Glad, any closing thoughts?
I really appreciate you having me on. You know, like I said, this race is, I think, more important than ever because it determines whether or not we have a voice in upstate New York in the state Senate. And I think that means a lot to us up here in terms of, you know, we talked about rural health care and rural education and how that you have to take a different approach to. And also, I think this election is going to be one of those elections we look back on and we say, did we do enough? You know, because I think a lot of us woke up in November of 2016 and thought, boy, I probably should have done more on that one. And I don't want to wake up in 2018 and feel that way. And so I know there's a lot of people like that. We're all fired up. And it's not just about a political ideology. It's just about making our communities better for folks, for my daughter and your daughter and my son and your son's. And I think public service is a way to do that. And even if you're not running, you know, if you're knocking doors and you're making phone calls, that's public service.
I agree.
Certainly. And, you know, I think that we all get so caught up in, you know, the congressional race and what's going on in Washington, D.C., that we forget that so much of our life is determined right here at home in the state Senate.
It is.
You know, in the assembly races.
Whoever wins this state Senate is going to be the one to redistrict.
Right.
You know, and I support an independent redistricting because you've seen the map.
Yes.
There's no sense to it. Well, yeah. the sense is political.
Oh,
right?
The sense is income based also.
So right. I think there are issues that are going to reverberate for a generation from this election. And I think when it comes to things like protecting women's reproductive health rights, to bail reform and criminal justice reform, to education equality, to water infrastructure. I mean, these issues are more important than ever. And we all need to be engaged, and we all need to be out there you know, even if you're knocking doors and it's not for me, that's okay. You should be out there knocking doors because this is our right. This is our country. We are Americans. And that's one of the things I fought for overseas.
And where can voters find more information about you?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a website, www.aaronglad.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You know, reach out. Reach out to the campaign. Get involved. Even if it's not my race, get some of these local races are really important in assembly. You know, we have a coroner's race. You know, people are excited, though. People are really fired up this year, and I think we just have to maintain that momentum. And I really think that we can change the world.
You know, I must say that I've lived in Texas and San Francisco and New York City, and I have never seen a place where people as grassroots organized and invested as upstate New York.
That is
so
true.
We're very lucky that way. Mr. Glad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Turning our attention now, having talked about some state and local races, we did want to talk about some stuff that's going on in Washington, D.C., specifically the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, which has been derailed this week. It went from a pretty much a sure thing to sort of a toss-up. A professor in California, Christine Blasey Ford, has accused Kavanaugh of attempted sexual assault while they were both in high school. What are our thoughts about this in this specifically the case? I mean, is this something that we believe? No, I want to back that up. Is this something that should matter?
I think it definitely matters. It's this is for life. It's once he's nominated, he's on there for life. And I feel like maybe Americans are finally waking up to the fact that this isn't something to be as passive as we have been in the past, as far as justices that have gotten on. I can't help but think of Anita Hill and right. Clarence Thomas.
I mean, definitely the callback is right there.
Isn't it? It's the parallels are astounding. And here we are, what, 25 years later?
Well, and that was sexual harassment. This is sexual assault. This is something that's very...
It is, but if Thomas got through, I feel like Kavanaugh might as well, whether he deserves it or not, whether he did it or didn't do it.
I don't like Brett Kavanaugh. I will say that. My politics are the exact opposite of Brett Kavanaugh's.
Same, but I don't know if that matters, and I hate saying that, but I just can't help but think back to Anita Hill and how she got dragged through the mud and made fun of and ruined her career.
And I think
he got the nomination for Supreme Court anyway. It's like, what was it even all for?
I don't think that...
Other than her peace of mind and self-respect.
I certainly understand how Dr. Ford is very reticent to come forward.
She did not want to, yeah.
I don't know that what a 17-year-old boy does should inform a 53-year-old man who has shown no proclivity towards that sort of behavior since. Yeah. I mean, first of all, there's that because he was a minor at the time. Certainly, it's odious behavior. It's vile. But, you know, this was 36 years ago. I was certainly not doing that sort of thing at 17 years old. At the same time, you know, I understand that people make mistakes, sometimes very serious mistakes. Sometimes people make very serious mistakes in just a moment. And I don't know that that should inform the rest of their life.
Yeah, I am very conflicted about that. It looks like about 35, I'm reading a Reuters poll, it looks like about 35% of women oppose Kavanaugh's nomination and about 31% of men. So it seems...
35% of women oppose the nomination, like nationally or as Republicans?
This is over 2,000 adults across the United States. Doesn't say which party.
Interesting.
Just overall, which is, it looks like one of the strongest oppositions to a Supreme Court justice nomination.
Right. I mean, certainly I think that, you know, when this was anonymous, right? This should not, you know, I think that, you know, Dianne Feinstein did the correct thing in holding it, because you can't derail someone's career. It looks bad, and it is, I think, ethically problematic to bring up an anonymous accusation.
But is it more ethically problematic if this all turns out to be true and we let him on the Supreme Court?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Consider for a moment the ramifications of, you know, I want to step away from the sexual assault part. I'm trying to be careful here because I don't I don't wish to be pro-rapist at all. But consider the ramifications of a man who is in line for promotion or has a public career can have that career completely derailed by an anonymous accusation. Someone can come forward and say, well, someone else told me that you did this. That's gossip.
Right. Well, do you agree with the movement to have the claims investigated by the FBI?
I don't know how I feel about that, because I don't know what an FBI investigation looks like for a 36-year-old case involving a high school party.
Right.
I mean,
but my thing is, I'm almost wanting that to go through, because I feel on some level, if we derailed Hillary Clinton's career with an FBI investigation week before her.
Why not keep lowering ourselves? That's it.
I'm not saying that's why not keep lowering ourselves. I'm saying if we're going to do it to Hillary a week before the presidential election, why not do it to Kavanaugh before his Supreme Court nomination?
Why not? Don't we keep lowering ourselves?
Why? Let's keep it even.
But that's not. I mean, there is still, I think that there is still a truth that has value. There is still a right way and a wrong way to behave. And I know that the court of public opinion does not have due process attached to it, but I do think that it should still matter. I think that while I am certainly in favor of more exploration, I'm just not sure what an FBI investigation looks like. I'm not in law enforcement.
I just wonder.
I imagine that involves them interviewing people who used to be there,
right,
so that they could get some corroborating evidence. She did say that she did bring it up first in 2012 with a therapist, so presumably this is on part of a doctor's notes. She didn't say who it was at the time, but she did talk about this attempted sexual assault as part of couples counseling that she was at with her husband. So there is some kind of record that something happened. From 6 years ago, it seems implausible that, you know, they were doctoring notes or getting ready for his eventual ascension to the Supreme Court.
Exactly, which makes it carry a little more weight with me, because obviously she's not making this up. Something did
I don't know
happen,
that she's obvious. She's probably not making this up. She certainly has credibility.
Right. It's more credible than
she's a person of substance.
Yeah, and I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me. She's been getting, of course, death threats.
Still, the investigation itself seems like the most politically motivated part of this, right? Because then they get to drag this out. And so, you know, it becomes, do the Republicans shove through this nomination? Do they force a vote on it? Because the Democrats will use that going into the midterms.
Yeah.
Certainly. And they will almost certainly get a lot of mileage out of this with female voters and progressive voters.
I feel like I want to say, no matter how this comes out or ends up, that I think the Democratic Party is going to almost benefit no matter what.
There's no way that they don't.
Exactly.
I mean,
I don't want to say it's a win-win, but it is, you know, if Kavanaugh does go through, they have all this, you know, ready attacks for leading into November.
Right.
If he doesn't go through because of the sexual assault, they still get to say, well, look, the Republicans tried to put up a rapist for the Supreme Court. Either way, they come out
right
on top of that kind of moral.
Right. And even people within the Trump White House have said, no, this needs to be, we need to take a beat now and investigate this Kellyanne Conway, you know, kind of very surprisingly.
I was going to say, that's very surprising. I didn't see that.
The cynic in me wants to say that that's just kind of a cold calculation, but I also understand that these are probably human beings who, you know, I imagine that Kellyanne Conway even though I don't particularly care for her, might be really upset by this and by some of the graphic details. I mean, you know, she said they turned the music up so that nobody in the party could hear her. Mm-hmm. You know, he put his hand over her mouth so that she could not scream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are graphic and sort of unsettling details. You know, you have a reaction to that.
It's hard not to. Yeah, I mean, I feel like any human, no matter who you are, is going to have some sort of reaction to it. I wonder if the FBI gets involved. You know, where this takes the Supreme Court nomination, and then
I would imagine past the midterms, right?
Yeah,
and that's the problem, is that then you know,
then it's dragged on.
Well, it's dragged on. So presumably, like, you know, the Senate might actually flip for the Democrats now. It seemed very unlikely before, but it seems like a real possibility now. Yeah,
this is not helping.
And it may be that the Trump administration just says, you know what, we're going to pull the nomination. We're going to nominate someone else. We'll get most of the dirty work done now. And then we'll vote on them in the lame duck session that happens in between before the Democrats take over. And that's that.
Right. Which then makes me think back to Merrick Garland and how he wasn't, you know, allowed to be on the Supreme Court basically because of obstruction.
There's a lot of
when Obama was a lame duck.
There's a lot of hypocrisy. I mean, Lindsey Graham insisting that they take a vote right now, which surprises me because Lindsey Graham used to seem like sort of a moderate as Republicans go. Like, he seemed like a decent human being, and now I'm. He never ceases to disappoint me.
I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah, it's whenever we get that glimmer of, you know, hope and humanity in someone, like an outspoken Republican, you're like, all right, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? No? Oh, okay.
No.
Fall in line.
You know,
it's just very troublesome.
Right. But I've also thought as these allegations first came out, I thought, you know, part of me just thinks I don't want Brett Kavanaugh sat. No matter what,
regardless of these accusations, the favor was already low, and now it's even lower.
But part of it is just that politically, I don't want him there. But I just, you know, I don't want someone to have their life derailed by an accusation. And I think that I would like us to be able to, you know, again, as I said, when I was 17 years old, this is certainly something that I never did.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the acts of a 17-year-old should necessarily carry over to a 53-year-old.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Just
either way, it's not good for the Republican Party, and it gives the Democrats a lot to sink their teeth into, and the timing of it is very convenient.
Well, she had decided to go public, right?
Yeah.
You know, the information itself had been passed around, but she didn't wish to use her name.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're not going to use your name, you can't expect this to be put out. Unfortunately, that is the cost.
But now she has.
Right.
And now her name's out there, and I don't think it was necessarily even her choice at first, which also is really upsetting. People were posting her name, her address, her phone number,
absolutely,
her email, all over the internet, and these like men's rights activists and these you know, incel types of, you know, internet bottom dwellers were sending out her information as if, you know, she's some sort of criminal.
Right.
And villain in this whole scenario, which is what happens when women speak out.
You know, and part of me doesn't want to.
We've seen it time and time again.
And part of me does not
again,
want to judge.
Anita
yeah.
Hill.
Yeah. Part of me does not want to judge, you know, the Brett Kavanaugh of 1983 by the standards of 2018. When I think that, you know, obviously this standard was different and he was a kid, you know, I wish to say that he was raised in a different environment than we would raise our children in today. And
100%.
I don't think that putting that standard on him, you know, I didn't realize what the allegations, and then I went and I read the allegations, and by the standards of 2018 or by the standards of 1983, you know, the actions fail.
Exactly. Either way.
There's nothing acceptable about them in either time period.
No.
So, unfortunately, we'll see how that goes. We'll see if a vote gets taken on that this week.
We'll see.
If not, you know, they do have a couple of other Did you have a couple of other nominees queued up? You know, it's funny to think that there are probably large files on each of them, and they're just going to reach in. Let's try the next one.
Exactly. I feel like, yeah, I mean, they might be better off just
pulling
them.
What dark secrets are in your closet?
Exactly.
And they may just say, like, look, this is not going to work. You don't want this. And, you know, I can't imagine Dr. Ford coming up and sitting before that committee and having the committee really grill her, right? Like, I don't see them doing to her what they did to Anita Hill
right
many years ago. I think that they have learned the optics of that are really bad.
Mm-hmm. Joe Biden looking at you.
And so if they have to be very respectful, right? If they have to kind of treat her with kid gloves going in, and she's seated in the same room as him, they kind of have to be hard on him and less on her. And then how would they possibly vote to confirm him?
I wonder if she would do a public hearing if she...
She said she wants to, but she wants the FBI investigation first.
Part
of that, very cynically, I'm sure, is to try and delay this as much as possible.
And but also maybe it's to corroborate.
To corroborate and get some information so that, you know, she's not just going and getting grilled for no reason.
Exactly.
With no investigation. And properly, I think that this should be investigated. I don't know what the statute of limitations on a rape case is.
It's state by state, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, certainly I think we're at the point long past criminal charges.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. But yeah, it looks like there's about four other people on the short list that they might have to pull up. The next one looks like a woman, Amy Barrett of Indiana.
And she is especially kooky, I think.
Who clerked for Scalia, which is already kind of a red flag.
I believe that Kavanaugh clerked for Scalia as well.
So there's a few other names rolling around. It looks like this was released back in July of people they were looking at. So it's either we go forward with this public performance piece for another few months, or we start over and try again with someone else. If you were on the Republican, if you were in that room, what would...
I would probably have someone pull Brett Kavanaugh aside and say it's time to withdraw because we don't want the optics of this going into the midterms.
And that would be my instinct as well. It's like, hey, listen, this is too much heat.
Just
whether you did or didn't do it,
right?
You got to get out of here.
And whether you're and whether you're a good person now and maybe you did something before, you know, I don't want your bad deeds to follow you around forever. You should not have to walk around with a mark on you.
Yeah, but the stink is in the air.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
True or not. And I think they should just go ahead and pull him. It's too much.
Right. We'll see if they do, you know. George W. Bush came out and said he thought he was a decent and honorable fellow today.
Huh.
And that might have been George W. Bush's experience with him, you know.
Right.
And all well and good. That doesn't mean that, you know, Dr. Ford should not be heard.
Right. It's just a big old mess.
It is.
As are most things in Washington right now. It's a big old mess.
It is indeed a big old mess. And it's becoming a spectacle right before
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I imagine that Dianne Feinstein must have opened that letter and said, oh my goodness. I know it's July, but it feels like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. She's got the golden ticket.
She does. She certainly has some ammunition there going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Enough about Washington, though. Turning our attention back to the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. Greene County is having a very important vote tonight.
Tonight, in Catskill, I believe at 6:00. This is the vote on now it's down to $39 million for a new jail to be constructed.
Is the estimate, yes.
And that, which I'm a little surprised about, it went through the Finance Committee handily. It was in favor 7-2.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to the audio for that finance committee, you can go on our website, www.wgxc.org, and go to the newsroom, and you can find a link to an audio of that meeting.
In the only two no votes were our friend Aidan O'Connor out of Durham and my friend Kevin Lennon out of Catskill. They voted against the amendment for that $39 million bond. Everyone else on the finance committee approved it, and tonight is the vote that takes it to the full board, as far as I'm understanding. This is kind of, I feel like we're getting almost towards the end of this here. It's not looking great. I'm not sure, at least publicly, the no votes are not there. I don't know behind the scenes so much what's going on with certain legislators, but publicly it looks like there's more support than there isn't for this jail to be built in Coxsackie.
It's not that I'm opposed to, and I think that we discussed this before, mm-hmm. It's not that I'm opposed to the jail. I'm just opposed to, you know, all of the opportunities that you have if you're going to spend this money, like, is locking people up what you want to do with it. Maybe you have to.
There was an alternative to incarceration study proposed. It was voted down. There was, you know, the proposal to share with Columbia County. It was turned away. It's like they're just marching forward no matter what they're hearing from pretty much the majority of constituents, especially in Catskill, because we're the county seat. We are going to be the ones paying for most of this. We pay the highest amount of taxes for Greene County by far.
Is that just because of the population?
Because of the population, yep. Right. And we have the biggest school district, yada, yada. So we are, I think it's a huge, huge issue, especially within the village and town of Catskill, because we are smart enough to know that we're mostly going to be paying for this. You know, Jewett isn't going to be putting as much money. You know, Durham isn't going to be putting as much money as Catskill is.
Right.
And if it's only Catskill and maybe, you know, Aidan who are disagreeing with it, that's only 4 or 5 people. We don't have it.
Right.
And the residents are just outraged. I don't know if you saw the footage from the last meeting, the public safety meeting a few weeks ago. It was testy.
I did see some of that. And yet, I mean,
heated.
And yet, you know, when Aidan was here, he was sympathetic to the Greene County residents who said, you know, everything that we have is going away. These are jobs. This is part of our, you know, this is part of our community.
And that is a very, I understand where they're coming from to a degree. I mean, I've lived in Greene County my entire life. I'm from there. But it's like Aidan said, it's like, what kind of economy do we want going forward? A prison economy?
Right.
That's all we want to have. We don't want to have great schools or, you know, great creative community or, you know, beautiful,
you know,
land. We want to be known for prison.
out here on Fairview Avenue.
And welfare. That's our biggest out here programs.
Out here on Fairview Avenue, a man from Athens,
mm-hmm.
New York, over in Greene County, you know, an architect and professional man, was found after having overdosed 9 days in his car in the Walmart parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see more safe injection sites. Or if they are going to build a prison, we know what the problems are right now, you know, certainly within our upstate communities.
Oh, 100%.
Heroin is a very big problem. So if they're going to incarcerate
people... And I feel
people,
like legislators are not dealing with that in a very responsible way. You're right. That's a huge part of it. Most of the people who are sitting in Greene County Jail are there either because they are on drugs, have violated parole of some sort,
right,
and can't afford bail.
Right.
So they're poor and on drugs, and that's why they're locked up for weeks, sometimes months at a time. And we want to build a bigger facility to lock more people up.
Right.
I would like to see
treatment as I would love to see a treatment facility.
I feel like it's immoral.
Yes, I do. At the same time, you know, kind of anecdotally, I have a friend who will remain nameless who mm-hmm. went to prison for years for dealing drugs. He was a pretty big drug addict at the time, and he Absolutely. He's like, you know, it was probably the best thing that happened to me is that I spent a couple of years in federal prison drying out and cleaning myself up.
Right.
Because I was...
But what happens to all those addicts who... I don't know. I feel like it almost, you know, sometimes, especially if you're not there for as long a period of time as maybe he was, you come out, you're jonesing more. You just go back out.
That's still not a... Yeah. The story of one man, mm-hmm. you know, might be compelling, but it's not a statistic.
Yeah.
It's not a statistical, you know, truth.
Right. But I see both sides, but I just think there's so much more, as you said, that we can be doing to... This is not what I want my hometown, my county to be known for. I don't want to be known for locking poor people up or, you know, sending people to jail instead of rehab.
Essentially, every county has a jail.
Well, of course, but my point is we are so adamant about pushing this jail through because it will create jobs, blah, blah, blah. We could also build a rehab facility.
Yeah.
We could also spend some money to do more drug programs within our schools.
Yeah.
We could do more community outreach that doesn't involve jail necessarily or, you know, community service. There's just
if you want to stop the heroin addiction, I would like to see safe injection sites go up throughout the county. And I know that that is just
it's a very controversial.
I know it, but it's still the right thing to do.
Probably.
You know what? I have had friends who have overdosed way. You know, they're alone. They're relapsing. They are ashamed of themselves. They're just going to do it this once, and that's it, and they're done.
Yep.
And I think that that is a terrible thing to have happen. I know that we don't want people. I know that we don't want people using heroin, but if we create a safe injection site and then we say, okay, and when you're ready, you know, come talk to us, and we'll get you the steps that you need. We're coming with a much more cooperative approach to rehabilitation, and I think that there is something to be said for that. There's also something to be said for the fact that we would have fewer dead people.
Exactly. It's a public health issue, and I think you and Aiden have both spoken on that, and I agree. This is much more than just... I feel like the people who are... I wish we did get someone on who's in support of the jail to kind of pick their brain a little bit about it, but...
I know that we were looking for someone for today, but...
And it's a little hard to find people who are willing to go on record, but the way that I see the argument, the pro-jail argument framed anyway, is all this very like, oh, it's about jobs. It's about I'm reading a quote from someone on the planning board. It's, you know, we got to keep our identity and we got to create jobs and the economy this and, you know. I just don't think that's the way necessarily to deal with people, struggling people.
I get how that's compelling, though. I mean, I get that. I get that a job working in a prison is a good job.
It is, and unfortunately, there aren't many in Greene County.
Right.
This is like a twofold issue. It's the public health side of it, but then it's also the economic. The lack of economic opportunities that we have in Greene County to have good jobs outside of jail or, you know, county work.
Do we think that there is a hybrid model?
There must be. There's got to be a way to kind of balance that need for job growth and creation and have a functioning, stable economy, but also not at the expense of our most vulnerable members of society who are already... You know, on the, you know, the
they're
poor, you know.
Right, they're already more at risk.
It's pretty disheartening. I'm very curious to see how this vote tonight is going to go. I know there's going to be a huge turnout. Every meeting, you know, committee or public, they've all been pretty heated over the last year or so, and I feel like this vote is really coming to a head. I feel like a lot of legislators are maybe not as safe as they think they are as far as November. I know I've heard from several people who are saying if my representative votes for this jail, I am not voting for them in November or
and
whenever.
Conversely, you know, a lot of people are probably going to vote against their legislator if they vote against the jail.
Right. So yeah, it's just,
and that is representative democracy for you.
Right.
You know?
You're damned if you do. But I just wish that the legislator had taken the opportunity to study a little bit more alternatives.
It is certainly a large chunk
money
of money
towards rehabs instead of jail.
Yeah, it is certainly a large chunk of money to be moving in one fell swoop. It is also kind of illuminating, you know, when you stop and think about how much money is spent and how little time and expertise, you know, well-meaning legislators mm-hmm. sometimes have to explore these topics. You know, they aren't supposed to be experts in incarceration or alternatives or economic development. They were elected to represent, you know, and there's a steep learning curve there. And then you're being given a very large bank account.
Right.
And you're expected to spend it as wisely as possible. And I do have a lot of sympathy for legislators on both sides of the aisle who have a very steep learning curve.
Right. I'm very curious. I might actually go tonight to that meeting just so I can see for myself. I haven't been able to go to any due to my work schedule, but tonight might be the night I go and see for myself what's going on in that room. But it's just...
And that will be taking place where?
That will be at the Green County Building, right in the middle of Main Street in Catskill at 6 o'clock.
And that is where... That is where social services are as well. Okay. Yes.
So yeah, we'll see. It's. Don't worry though. It's a smaller budget, and it is a little less beds than the original proposal. So, at least there's that.
I don't really understand how it can still cost $40 million.
Exactly. Our current jail.
But then
was holding 35 beds, and now we're going to double that when we don't have double the amount of people or crime. We just don't.
Although ostensibly you would want to have that space, right? I mean, I assume that you would be scaling up, right? Like you need only so many offices, so many showers, so many exercise rooms, so many TV rooms, one kitchen. And so the number of beds that you have...
I think that is a state-driven... there is like a state... requirement, yeah, that I'm sure we are having to meet, but it just seems pretty wild to me. And I, as far as having an identity, I just don't really think this is it. But a lot of people within the community, especially, I feel like more rural dwelling and of a certain age, this is what they want. They want us to have something, you know. And if it's not going to be a school or a college or, you know, a hospital, it's, we got to have something because Columbia County took everything from us.
Well,
which is this odd kind of attitude. I don't
a little sympathy for people who are in rural areas mm-hmm. is that, you know, as society rearranges itself around more urban corridors
right.
and in more dense urban areas, you know, they're going to feel left behind. We don't have broadband the way that the city has. We don't have the same kind of social services that you get in New York City.
Mm-mm.
And we were talking about
the
state.
We don't have the jobs.
We were talking about the state primary. We are in a totally different place from New York City. We didn't even expect the Attorney General's race to come out the way the Attorney General's race did. I still can't pronounce. I still can't remember the name of our new Attorney General, Attorney General candidate,
Letitia James.
Because there was,
I think she's out of Brooklyn
Or the Bronx, maybe.
Yeah, something. One of the boroughs.
I remember something about her, but you know, she seemed impressive at the time. But I never heard anything else. It was all Zephyr Teachout and Sean Patrick Maloney.
I've never seen her. I've never heard from her. And again, that is that we are
disconnected.
I want to call it cultural. There's a very distinct cultural difference between upstate New York and downstate. You know, there's just a whole different culture. I don't know if there's a need for it, but
I feel a cultural disconnect. I'm from more urban areas. It was never a part of my DNA growing up.
Right.
Was to feel like I was part of a rural area. I mean, so I see it now, but I'm also, you know, coming from large cities, like I don't think that it exists in the same way to our perception, you know, when I lived in New York or San Francisco or Houston or Austin, I never perceived, you know, that we were taking something away from people in the country. It's just that there are more people in an area, and so you do the most good for the most people.
Exactly. But up here and, you know, being raised rural, there is kind of a, there is a definite just culture difference. I mean, even if we just get down to transportation, how do we all get around up here? We've talked about this. You have to drive.
Right.
You have to drive. There's that. There's the income
and there's
disparity,
a real, and
the
there's,
cost of living.
Yeah, and there's a real
internet.
there's a real resistance to those sort of changes.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to take a bus and like Uber. Well, you know what's a,
well, what's
a,
that?
What's a self-driving car? No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what I mean by cultural difference. Yeah, it's just this kind of. I feel pretty, I'd say, disconnected from the city at this point. I just...
Do people self-sort, do you think? I mean, do people who are resistant to change self-sort into a more rural area so that they can have maybe a... because they are so resistant to change that they...
That's a good question. It's like the chicken
or
the
egg. And so they feel more comfortable in... Yeah, so they feel more comfortable in a rural area, or is it the fact that you grew up in a rural area that makes you so resistant to change because you just didn't see much change growing up, whereas someone in an urban area, you know, the world was kind of... The landscape was kind of constantly shifting.
Exactly. That's a good question. I feel like there's a bit of both. I know... Most people who grew up with me, we're all, you know, in our late 20s, early 30s now. Most of them did move away to, you know, either north or south to bigger cities and more populated, much more liberal environments. And maybe that was brought about by our upbringing. But then, you know, there's people like me who are progressive and stayed. So I don't know. It's a bit of both, but there's a definite cultural difference between upstate and downstate, and we've seen it the past few years, especially with the way these elections are turning out. Like I said before, all like 10 counties, 11, 12 counties upstate went for Nixon heavily.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was in, I mean, there were a couple further west.
Yeah.
There were a few counties further west, but everything else was sort of concentrated around the Albany area.
It's crazy, this map. It's like a 50-mile radius of Albany, and not a single county went for Cuomo.
But
that's his supposed home district, like his home base. And
but then outside of that...
all Cuomo.
All Cuomo.
Yeah, from
all day.
From Ulster County. What is this green? Yeah, from Ulster County down, and from... This looks like west of Schoharie all the way out to Buffalo. Buffalo was a little mixed, but yeah, pretty much everything was Cuomo in every direction except his home base.
Yeah.
Which is...
Although I would say that New York City is probably his home base, right? I mean, New York City is where most Cuomo voters are probably going to reside.
But I mean, within, you know, Albany proper, not a single county went for him, and... I feel like this just in this map would be almost identical if we went back to the 2016 election
with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
and
it was when Bernie and Hillary squared off in the primaries, it was almost the exact same map. As far as I remember, like all of downstate and New York City and out west went for Hillary, and pretty much everywhere bordering Vermont and Massachusetts and all around the Albany, even maybe a little bit further north, they all went for Bernie.
It'll be interesting to see Cuomo now, you know, coming out of this. I don't know outside of our area what the perception of Cuomo is.
Yeah, I have no
but
idea.
But it does seem like Molinaro, I mean, I would not say that Molinaro is the odds-on favorite to win in November at all. But
no.
It's going to be an interesting race to watch because Cuomo is, of course, also rehearsing for 2020.
Allegedly
he is rehearsing for 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how he runs against someone who at least presents as a somewhat moderate Republican.
I think that's a tougher race than maybe he's realizing.
I think this is a year for Democrats. So I don't think that Molinaro has any, I don't think that he has any tailwinds.
I don't know. I mean, if we swapped out the name Nixon for Molinaro, I feel like this map would look pretty much exactly the same. So come November, that might be the outcome.
You may be right.
Will win overall, but within, you know, and all of Albany and the surrounding areas, maybe not.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly that is something I hope that this is a weakness within the Democratic
Party,
right? Is that centrist Democrats
yes.
and liberal Democrats don't seem to ever see eye to eye. It does look like we are out of time. We will be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, this is John Kane.
And Marikita Reese.
And you've been listening to At Issue on WGXC. We will see.